Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Muted when I made my first comment, so Paul was about to laugh at me.
You pulled a me, huh?
I did.
You did my move.
Yeah.
You don't even have that many interfaces anymore. Like, you have no excuse for this.
I still have a bunch that I'm kind of working with.
Holy shit.
Down goes Frazier.
I had to. I was.
And Jess Kimmerer went down. So there we go. We're off to an absolutely glorious start.
Very, very off-season kind of shit going on here on this podcast.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we're in the off-season now. There's the spring sports that have some level of interest to them, but it's not, obviously not men's basketball and football. But yeah, Maryland baseball, Maryland men's lacrosse, they both have a good sort of solid following that they're both doing well this year. So, well, yeah, men's lacrosse team is not doing as well as hoped.
They saved themselves, I think, last week with the, they beat Michigan, right? So was it Penn State?
No. Yeah. 2 weeks ago, they beat Penn State. They were down, I think 8-3 and came back and won 13-11. They were in danger and still are of not getting an automatic bid to the national tournament. So they got to win their games. They've got three left: Ohio State, Rutgers, and then at Johns Hopkins, which will always be tough. It's a rivalry game. We've been talking lacrosse, Jeff, while you were recovering.
I was thinking about lacrosse while I was doing that.
Yeah. Was it
most of my life I spent thinking about lacrosse?
Yeah, that's what knocked your camera down. You were so
exactly. Yeah. Energy.
So pissed that they might not make the tournament. It was just the rage just comes out sometimes.
They're back on track now, so you can relax after their win against Penn State. So
it's a big win.
Yeah, it was a big win. Penn State was ranked fourth, I think. Yeah. Okay. Have we lost everybody yet? No, the numbers are they're slowly creeping up.
No, I haven't tweeted yet. Let me
I should probably do the thing, right?
Yeah, do the tweet. We got about half and half right now between X, whatever, Twitter X and YouTube. So we're building up here. Last week we did a show and we recorded it early in the morning because of schedules and lining up with Rodney Rice. And Paul, you made the joke that because we weren't going to post it until 7:30 that night, you made the joke, watch, Jacoby's going to commit in between now and the time we do the show, and it's going to blow the whole show.
Yep.
And that happened.
Yep. I knew it. We guaranteed it when we did that. I just knew it was going to happen. Again, maybe, you know, maybe I can, you know, say that like the Jimerson kid is guaranteed to be committed by the next show. Maybe that'll help that happen. I don't know. Whoever we decide we want out of the portal, let's go ahead and like reverse jinx that somehow. I'm happy to do that. My credibility means nothing to me. I'm just a dude on the internet. So like, whatever. But yeah, no, it was guaranteed when we did that thing. I was like, man, well, we got like 5 hours in between these. He's definitely committing in between, and he sure did. But hey, that's good, right?
I learned that lesson every time I sit on any news. Whenever I'm 50-50, I've found over the years, if I end up regretting it 90% of the time, it's because I did not go ahead and just put it out there, whatever I had at the moment.
Whenever yeah, you hold something, even if you have to qualify at least you get something out of that, right? You know,
yeah.
You're at least throwing it out there. Like it's, you know, maybe you don't make the final, you know, this is definitely going to happen kind of prediction. You know, the 8 or 9 or 10 crystal ball thing. But I mean, if you got it, you might as well, you know, smoke them if you got them, right? I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? Something changes, whatever.
But exactly. Then he gets railed on Twitter, and
he's gonna get
people
that
have been
anyway.
Pretty good lately, though. I haven't really gotten too many trolls. I feel like we've been on a pretty good streak of getting things right now for a while. Last year, this time, everybody was all on my ass about Hunter Dickinson, as if I said he was coming to Maryland for sure or anything even close to that. But mostly if there's beef, it's either Indiana fans or women's basketball fans. I haven't got too many people trolling me about being wrong on a pick or anything lately.
Hey, some people are saying that I'm really low. Can you tell me if that's still happening? Because I just tried to change a setting to see if that helps. So just let me know.
Yeah.
If you just don't want to hear me, that's fine too. And I can just talk in silence.
Well, they wouldn't have said anything and let you be silent if they didn't want you to hear you. So
yeah, that is weird. So I do appreciate that. But let me know if that is fixed or it's still a problem.
But you're right. I am sure that there are some people who are very happy when they couldn't hear you. I'm sure that was like a positive.
Yeah,
I was.
No, I mean,
our most popular video of all time is sans Paul, right?
Yeah, that's
so there
perfect.
You go.
That's perfect.
And me, right?
And you, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just Larry's doing numbers for those who haven't watched it. Larry did a great video analyzing and projecting the future of conference realignment, you know, with every conference by conference, which team is really good. And it's doing way better than our show usually does. So maybe that's
it. Well, it's because it appeals to every college fan base almost instead of just the one, right? So all of our the funny, interesting tidbit about our Derek Queen videos, which also have done very well. Two of the top six cities of viewers, because we can see where the viewers come from, are Indianapolis and Bloomington, Indiana. So they're watching the Derek Queen videos. Normally it's like Baltimore, Washington, like Columbia.
That was the Indiana basketball publisher in Indiana who just kept watching it over and over again.
crying into their computer. Yeah.
At least a few thousand of those.
I love it. But yeah, if you haven't watched Larry's video, it's very good. It's very good and has lots of interesting comments from one of those things that, you know, when you start talking things that aren't just Maryland specific, they do kind of get out in the algorithm a little bit and get a little more play from non-Maryland fans, which is interesting.
I got a couple of haters too, which was awesome, man.
Nice.
Trashed me in the comments. I'm like,
love that.
That's good.
There's actually an interesting article in The Athletic this afternoon about this new group of executives and whatnot trying to get some sort of new set up for the NCAA in football in terms of getting rid of conferences and making it more like an NFL structure. We've got like 70 top programs would be like permanently in that league. And then you have kind of a promotional relegation system for the programs that are below that in terms of moving up and moving down.
But here's the problem. It's the same thing with soccer in the United States. No one in the top division is going to agree to that system because they don't want to risk it.
Well, the thing is that the top 70 would always be safe. It would be basically the lower programs that are either, you know, G5 or below or whatever. I don't even know what they're called anymore. But any of the, like, programs currently in the Big Five conferences would be safe and would not be
subject to pro rel. It would be the ones below that. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think, I don't know if anybody that's actually going to work, but it's an interesting article you should look at. I think Andrew Marchand from New York Post Sports Business Journal posted on Twitter earlier. And it's just, it's interesting that at least somebody is thinking about what the future is going to look like, because you've still got a ton of lawsuits hanging out there. You've still got, like, you know, I don't think the system as is just going to be able to continue when you're moving in a direction where it looks like players are eventually going to be considered employees. And, you know, at this point, you've got a 7-year, I think, extension of the college football playoff, which gets you into early 2030s. And that's exactly when all those current conference TV deals start ending at the same time. So if you're going to have a chance to do something, you got to plan now, figure it out now, and try and implement it when all those TV deals are starting to kind of fall apart anyway. But
except the ACC, which are stuck until freaking 2030.
Is that even really a TV deal? It's more of like an internet, you know, like a streaming deal than anything else. But, you know,
I talked about it in my thing. ESPN actually controls the rights. They could end it early, actually, in 27.
Oh, so ESPN has the ability to end it early.
Yes.
The ACC does not. Okay.
The television deal they have. The grant of rights goes to 2036 regardless, but the television deal could be ended by ESPN. Make it actually next February in 2025 is when they have to decide by whether they want to end it in 27 or not. So we'll see. It's going to happen within 10 months or so. Well, I think before that, I already said all this in my video. If you really care what I have to say, go watch my video. I go through all that detail of all that stuff and how I think it's going to affect everything.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's certainly interesting. And if you're a Maryland fan, from our perspective, the bottom line is Maryland's guaranteed itself a place at the table, whether it's just as a member of the super expando Big Ten or in some other, you know, world where this is going to be like a top league and a bunch of lower leagues. So you got to be feeling pretty good about that on top of however you feel about the program as a whole.
Maryland feels pretty good. I do suppose there is the outside chance at an absolutely cutthroat league where they decide, all right, we're only going to take the top 30. Maryland might not be in the top 30, right? And we're going to make an NFL style. That super cutthroat thing could happen, right?
Eventually. I don't know that can happen. I think the issue is for that to happen. I think the conferences would have to agree to it, and you're never going to have enough of those top 30 schools in each conference to be able to say, you know what, we're just going to blow the rest of the conference up. You four schools are screwed, but the rest of us are going. So
that is what it'll be, a top two of about 40 some schools, and all those top 30 will be within just the two conferences. That's what's coming up.
Well, I think you could imagine the SEC and Big Ten combining to do that type of thing. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I don't know if you're – well, in that case, Maryland's probably safe anyway, because the Big Ten's going to look out for its own. If it ends up just being kind of like you've seen in world soccer, where you've got these top clubs in each of the leagues are trying to get together and build the Super League, you know, those teams don't have any real – affiliation or need to give a crap about how the other teams in their league feel, right? Whereas if you are part of a conference now, and you will be probably part of that conference in every other sport except football, you're going to have some lagging kind of reliance on those other schools that, you know, you're not necessarily going to be able to just drag through the dirt if you want to split. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they're safe. Obviously, there's other schools that would go before them if that happened, because there's a lot of redundancy in the Midwest with teams that aren't in big markets. There's, you know, that would go first.
And then you'll have the state politics of if Oklahoma leaves, does Oklahoma State get to leave too? Or, you know, it's a mess, but
with the Big Ten. With the Big Ten is also the academic stuff, which I've heard people say many times that the money from the academic consortium dwarfs the money from football. That's hard to believe, but I've heard so many people say it that's kind of what I believe. I've never seen numbers on that, but if it's true, Maryland is good for that too. Maryland's a pretty pretty good academic school with the rankings and research, and it's a state flagship and all that stuff. So it's not going to happen, but I'm just saying, like, the ultra cutthroat league, that's the only case where Maryland would be a little trouble.
Yeah, that's probably right. And, you know, nobody wants to hear us talking about this right now, but
I know
I was so excited about your podcast. I'm like, man, now I got all these questions and thoughts about it. So
I was just
we should do a separate one.
I couldn't tell if he was like looking down at a text because someone else.
I was sleeping with my eyes open.
Okay, who texted you, Jeff? Was it someone committing
to the Bob Stone, man? Big Bob Stone. He always Wednesday nights.
You've been practicing. You've been promising Bob Stone for the better part of a decade now, and man, I've still not to
Bob
one.
Stone in a minute.
I would still do it tomorrow. Absolutely.
When is the next player committing to Maryland? Because they're going to get two more transfers now, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little while. I'll have stuff on this on the site soon, including a new, very attractive prospect. Excuse me, prospect that they're involved with, and I think have a pretty solid shot at, but I don't think it'll be quite as quick trigger as the past couple have been. There's a few guys who are going through the NBA draft process, who they like, so they could be waiting on some of those guys. So it wouldn't shock me if someone popped up. Bryce Pope obviously being an interesting name from San Diego, not San Diego State, but Cal San Diego in the Big West. He's a guy they like, put up 18 points a game last year, two-time all-conference guy there. But there's other guys out there. It never surprises you if a guy pops up out of the blue, but I don't think there's one coming like in the immediate future.
So maybe we should just kind of lay out where we are at the moment. So, you know, at this point, you're already down Noah Batchelor. You're down Callum Swanton-Roger. You're down Jamie Kaiser. That's a new one that just happened a couple days ago. Who's the fourth one that I'm missing?
Did you say Swanton-Roger?
Yeah.
John Lamothe,
too. So you're down four guys. At this point, you've got Ja'Cory Gillespie. You've got Rodney Rice coming in. You've got Chance Stevens basically coming off a redshirt year. With his injury problems and whatnot. And you've got Jahari Long, which is going to be a real complicated situation because with that ACL, it's almost certain he's not going to play next year, at least certainly in the first half. Maybe you could imagine him playing in the second half of the season if, you know, I don't know whether he can take a medical redshirt at this point. He's already on his fifth or sixth year, and I don't know. But that seems like a total mess. So, like, are you working with two scholarships now, Jeff, at the moment?
Yeah, there's two left right now, two open. Long, as you said, is to be determined his status. I'm pretty sure he can get a medical redshirt kind of situation. Then he'd be playing 6 years, but it feels like every team has a six-year player on it these days. So that's kind of a wait and see. But even without him, with Jamie Kaiser leaving this week, as you mentioned, which was a little bit of a surprise, not quite an Ian Martinez level surprise, but you have two now to work with. They need more scoring, outside shooting. You know, it doesn't have to, the first, in terms of like a score, I don't necessarily have to be like a 3-point specialist, but it's pretty clear they want somebody who can shoot the three and can also score in other ways. And then, you know, with that last spot, maybe you get a forward in the Dante Scott mold, but that's tough because people know that you have Queen and Reese coming back, so they're going to be concerned about starting and those sort of things. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because I feel like with what they've done so far and with as good as Queen looked, albeit just one time in an All-Star game, you know, we know it wasn't a fluke, but that doesn't mean he's going to be an All-American, but with as good as he looked, you know, all of a sudden, I hate to, you know, people say, oh, last year you said they should be, they look like they could be ranked preseason. I mean, but you got some pretty nice pieces there. You still have some question marks, but I don't think you could have improved the roster much more than this in however many weeks it's been since the season ended for them.
We'll ask our guest coming up in about 12 minutes is Colby Giacobino. And he is just an awesome analyzer of basketball in general. It's pretty cool. He goes to as so many high school games. He's on top of the whole thing. And so we'll ask him, all these new players coming in, players leaving, what's that going to turn out to be, you know? And what else does maybe Maryland need besides what they've already got? I'm already, obviously, the backup point guard, a swing man, right? That's the obvious stuff, but maybe he can get a little more into that.
They're asking, I mean, if you're looking at the roster currently, right, the obvious thing to me looks like you needed at least one more guard or wing player, potentially a backup point guard, but maybe not necessarily if you feel like Rice is going to get some of those minutes too. I know DHS came in with at least the intention of playing a little bit as a ball handler. I don't know whether that's really his best role, but I don't know what Willard might have promised him at the timers camp or what have you. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, it feels like with all of these decisions on the portal and everything, you're going to have a lot more politics going on in terms of not just a kid being happy at a certain school, but what their role is going to be, NIL, all that stuff, right? So I don't know whether they end up going that way. To me, maybe you look at, if you're talking about a kid like that kid Pope, he looks more like if you're building an NBA team, you want him to be that lead guard that comes in the second quarter and gives you 8 strong minutes, you know, kind of push and play, right? And in terms of the big man situation, Kaiser's gone. I kind of hope that Kaiser might turn into more of a small ball four than the three he played a lot last year. Geronimo obviously gives you a lot of defense, some athleticism if he sticks. But then again, like, you can't count on him to be a guy who can shoot if he's going to be playing the four with Reese or with Queen on the inside. So you probably need at least a 3-4 guy who, if nothing else, is a 3-and-D kind of guy, but certainly somebody who could shoot the ball a little bit. But then again, maybe Geronimo splits. Maybe you have an Ian Martinez situation where somebody splits that you're not expecting. I mean, it's just a total crapshoot. You know, I've got a whole month of this left, so it's really hard to project any of this stuff out. And I certainly don't envy the coaches having to try and figure out how they want to handle this.
Yeah, that's the NIL aspect of it. You got to have enough money to pay, but you also got to have not pay enough that everybody else finds out and wants a raise. It's a lot more complicated than it's ever been, but I'd take $4 million to worry about it, I guess, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, I will go back and pimp that show you guys did with Harry Geller, who's in charge of Turtle NIL, and it looks like Maryland, certainly from the results we've seen already in the portal, getting a top guy like Gillespie, it looks like Maryland is at least playing with some money in a way that they haven't before. So I'm not sure. Queen. Well, obviously Queen was, that's been in the works for like literally years.
But still,
I don't know. Right. And I don't know how transferable that is. We'll see whether that Queen money is a thing that will be there after Queen. But that's a whole nother.
And Reese, too. And
Reese
didn't come back without getting in. You know, like I've said before, he knows what Queen got and he knows he's proven himself to be worth more, obviously, at this stage, since Queen is unproven on the college level. So also, you know, you probably roughly doubled what you're paying him. So yeah, as Harry said it, and obviously he wasn't, you know, blowing smoke. I think they have about 3.5 times the budget they had last year.
And the starting five next year is looking like Queen, Reese, Gillespie, Rice, DHS. There's kind of a gap there. There's like 3 outside players, 2 inside players, and you don't have any of those swing types in the middle, right?
They really need Julian Reese to make huge strides this summer. He's never going to be a small forward, but they need him to become a guy who can hit some threes, play facing the basket more, let Queen operate, you know, down low. So that is a huge key to their offseason. He needs to become somewhat of a face-up four for the whole thing to work.
I think you just wonder if you can play him in the high post. If you're going to play the two of them together, if you can get Queen on the block and Reese on the high post, you've seen him a little bit when they played against zone where he'll go up there and he doesn't look totally uncomfortable, but he's also not a guy who's going to break somebody down on the dribble or, you know, be popping 15 footers in somebody's face. So he certainly has some work to do there. But again, I still, certainly they're going to have to play together at times. But if I'm building this roster, I'm trying to find basically a starting level four. He might not put up 15 and five, but a guy who's good enough to, you know, so that you're splitting those minutes at center so that they might be able to split the game at center. You're only playing them together maybe 10 minutes at a time. I mean, look, Derek Queen is exceptional, but he's not going to walk in here and play 35 minutes a game. Julian Reese, given his foul trouble and his reputation with the refs, is probably not going to play 35 minutes a game. So I'm not super worried about the idea of them not being able to play together. It's more about, can you get a four-man who honestly is not Geronimo because he's not good enough for that, who can give you 20 minutes, 20 quality minutes playing with one of those other guys at the center. That to me feels like the key as to whether this becomes like an okay team with potential to be good or a team that looks like it might really, really be good.
Yeah, that's the catch with a lot of these guys is you've somewhat got your starting lineup filled out now and they know it. So who are you going to get, you know, whether it's probably a guy like the Pope kid who I mentioned who put up really good numbers at a lower level. Those guys are mostly wanting to go somewhere where there's a wide open spot, kind of like it worked with Gillespie at point guard. You know, he knew, this whole Jameer Young role had opened up completely for the next guy. So a lot of them are looking for that. So that's the challenge, finding a guy who may not start, who wants to start, but, you know, is still good enough to come in and help you and willing to play that role.
We have some questions building up, so I want to get to those. We have Colby Giacobino joining us, basketball analyst, coming up in about 5 minutes. So let me just go through some of these. Let's go to Roz.Wheat, I guess is how you say that. We're not finding out who's next. The title says find out who's next. So, Jeff, who's next?
100% predictions.
Honestly, I'm not being coy when I say I can't really predict who's next at this point. There's a whole bunch of names on the radar, including this new one that I'm going to be busting out Thursday morning. But it's hard to say who's next. Again, they're looking at some guys who are going to take a while, who are still considering the NBA. There's some guys who still haven't entered the portal yet, you know, that everybody, including Maryland's, waiting to see if they do. So, like I said, it would be total guesswork right now to say who's next. You know, maybe next week we'll have a better feel for that. But I think now that they got those two guard spots out of the way, they're going to be a little more patient looking for the next perfect fit.
Are you getting an idea, Jeff, about the positions they're looking at? Is it just going to be this kind of like, say, Jahari Long style position, that kind of backup 1-2-3 guy and a power forward, or something in between?
I think it'll be a 6'4 to 6'6-ish kind of wing scorer who can shoot, not necessarily like a Logan Aaron Holt, you know, spot up specialist, a guy who can score in other ways too. And then the other spot, my guess, is a forward. There's still a chance that, you know, I was told they could still go for a backup point guard. I don't think Jahari Long is likely to play next year. It sounds like it was pretty serious, so it's going to take a while to come back. So there's a chance you could go for another point guard, but you know, I think they feel like Rice or DHS can probably play those minutes at the one.
From Jack Duffy, how about the FAU guard? I'm not even sure who he's talking about.
The Johnson, what's his name? He was an early name that popped up and then kind of faded, I think.
Yeah, haven't really heard anything.
Okay. Next.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. I have breaking news. Ian Martinez has entered the transfer portal.
Are you joking?
Really? I'm not joking.
Oh my god.
I'd love to have him back.
Go get him. Man. Bring him home. Come home, Ian. He'd be the perfect guy.
Come for free. I'm not sure Willard would take him. I don't think he'd take him back after last year. Nobody over there was very happy with how that went.
Yeah.
Down, you know,
he's just the perfect player for that guy. We need a 2-3 scorer too.
He's going to get paid. Yeah. Somebody's going to give him a bunch of money. Like, you know,
yeah, it's not going to be us.
$300,000-$400,000 at least, I would guess. And he could play anywhere at this. I mean, after what he showed last year, he could go to Kentucky or Canada. I mean, he's that level of, especially when you include the experience. That's crazy. Unbelievable. I mean, it just never, it's like
Caduce Wild. They'd have won a lot more games this year if he was there.
I got nothing, man. I can't.
You
got
to be, but imagine if you're Utah State, you pull a kid like that who is starting to look good at Maryland. He comes in, the arrangement couldn't work out any better for him. He comes in, he stars, you make the tournament, which nobody in the world expected, have this great season, work that, and then boom, gone.
Peace.
From Ben Litton, what the F, man? Why did Kaiser leave? I am so sad about this, too. I wanted to watch him grow over the course of 4 years, become a starter maybe by his junior year. I just – it makes me sad. This whole makes me sad.
I think the vision obviously was for him to start immediately, and even if that didn't work out great, that him and Deshaun Harris-Smith would be the building blocks during their sophomore year. You know, there's no way he didn't come in envisioning he'd be starting by sophomore year. Obviously, freshman year didn't go great, struggled a lot, showed a few things, but, you know, couldn't get the jumper to fall. You know, some defensive issues at times, although I thought he had a great motor, was the, you know, maybe the scrappiest guy on the team, arguably. But I think, you know, everybody wants to play, especially guys like that who, you know, top 60 or 70 recruit coming into a school like Maryland, doesn't work out for you. And then you see the coach, if you do the math, you know that the coach needs to win next year. That's not to say he's on the hot seat or getting fired, but he needs a bounce back year. So that means he can't take time developing you. He needs to bring in guys who he knows are going to be able to play right away. So you're going to be competing against some, like, potentially some 24-year-old established player next year. So I think they saw that and figured it'd be better for him to get a fresh start somewhere else with a better path to playing a large role, you know.
And reminds me of when Dwayne Simpkins was on the show and he told us a story about he just was not loving Gary because Gary is so combative at times. And he called his dad and said he was going to transfer. And his dad said, no, you're not. You're going to stay there. You're going to work it out. You're going to make it work.
Yeah.
And that's gone. That whole attitude is gone.
It's prehistoric at this point. I mean,
I know, but think about Dwayne Simpkins. I mean, like he's so great. He's like he's a classic great Terp, and I know he's not in the rafters Terp, but one of my favorite Terps, and he has this great career coaching now. And like
everything moves faster now in life and sports. And back then, it's like guys would be like, yeah, sure, I'll wait till my junior year to become like a full time player. It's just not the mindset anymore. Yeah. You know, we have short attention spans and everything, including that. And then with the portal, you know, his family's smart enough to see, you know, he wasn't going to be necessarily buried on the bench, but he was going to have competition
starting. Yeah.
to be a top guy.
I'm just old, but you know who's not old? Our guest who is here now. I know there's more questions. We'll get to the questions. Don't leave after Colby. We'll get to those. We're going to add Colby right now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Here he is, the man, Kobe G. Giacobino.
What's up, guys? How's everything?
Pronounced correctly, Giacobino.
Giacobino, yeah, close enough.
Giacobino.
Jack.
I said Jock. So Giacobino. Okay.
Next. He'll get it right eventually.
I'll get there. I was closer than most, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
I definitely said Giacobino in my head for like a year.
I get everything. A lot of people just don't even say it, so I just go by Kobe G. It's just what's easiest for everybody.
So, Kobe, we brought you on because you are the basketball analyst extraordinaire, and Maryland has had a lot of changes, a lot of guys going out, a lot of new guys coming in, and there's going to be more coming. What's the team now? What's the makeup? Are they better? Are they worse? Like, what's going on? What are you seeing here with the team?
I don't think there's a question that they're better. you add – obviously, Derrick Queen, which I know you guys have probably already talked about, but you go off the based off the performance last night. I still think there are other aspects of his game, even though he surprised some people with, say his perimeter defense and his ability to kind of muck up those high ball screens that were going on. I still think there's a lot of other layers to his game that people just aren't familiar with that haven't maybe covered him as closely for as long. But you add a five-star guy like him alone, that in itself makes you better. And then, that's not even touching on Jacoby Gillespie and Rodney Rice, who I think are two guys who they needed. They both do things that are much. I kind of pause just because, you are losing Jameer and that's so much production, but with how they, what they're expecting from Jacoby and Rodney, I think they can couple to replace that production. And I think just, with these other guys that they are targeting and looking to bring into the fold, paired with those guys who have gotten the year experience under Willard, I think it's all, everything's on the up and up right now.
Kobe, I'm not going to ask you what they need most because I think it's pretty obvious they need a shooter. But after that, with that other open spot we were discussing earlier, what do you feel like when you look at the roster? You feel like a forward, backup point guard, a backup center? Like, what do you think the most pressing needs are?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, they want to, in the ideal world, they want to address the shooting. I think there are guys and Jeff, I know you've probably been told the same. There are guys that, that are available. Like, they don't want to bring in just another version of Chance Stevens. If they have their Chance Stevens, they want him to, come off the bench, provide the pop in terms of the outside shooting presence. They just don't want to go and grab another guy that's just like him just to do it. They would want more of a well-balanced scorer that can kind of do a little bit of everything, maybe fill more of an Ian Martinez role that was needed so badly this year. But I think right under that, man, they need an athletic wing. And I think that's what they are more so targeting in that space. Obviously getting Derek coupled with, having Juju come back, I think it leaves a lot of flexibility within the rotation and the lineups to either have those two guys on the floor at the same time or, have Derek on at the five and Geronimo, whoever it may be, slide to the four. But I think their main focus here moving forward is finding a skill guard who can be a presence, in that six man role. And then just getting more athletic on the wing and preferably a wing that can knock down some open shots too. There's a few guys that are on their list, a few guys that they're kind of waiting for. And I think if those become official, one in particular, if they become official, they're going all in on them.
Kobe, can you speak a little bit about the idea of playing Derek and Juju together in terms of fit and what their skill sets are and whether you feel like you can match those together? And also, if they don't get, say, you know, a four-man who can shoot a little bit, if you're envisioning a scenario where you either got those two playing together or either of those two playing with Geronimo at the four, is that going to be enough shooting to succeed offensively based on what we've seen in the past year?
Yeah, I mean, do I think they can play together? Yes. I think that's where, especially, I feel like the staff's eyes were lighting up last night when Derek was, again, involved in those high ball screens as a defender and, you know, using his active hands and you know, doing the hard hedge and you know, it ended up having transition opportunities for his team. I think you can look at those scenarios and be like, okay, well, when we have Juju in as the back line, you know, Derek can kind of step out beyond the perimeter and take those chances rather than, you know, maybe have a soft show or if he wants to, you know, play in like drop coverage. Again, it depends on personnel, but I think seeing Derek's ability to get out and disrupt actions like that while having Juju on the backside is huge. To touch on the question when you were saying, you know, if you mix in Geronimo and those guys, do I think that's enough shooting? No, I don't think it's enough shooting, especially if you're talking about Juju and Geronimo. We saw that. We saw where that got him this year. What I will say is with Derek, the couple of things that, you know, again, like when AAU season is upon us, things are about to start kicking off. And of course, a lot of the attention goes to the EYBL circuit and rightfully so. But what I will say is, you know, on the UAA circuit where Derek just flat out dominated, you know, specifically him and Chance Mallory, like they have this connection in the ball screens where Derek's popping out for threes and, you know, it's not a quick trigger three that he's taking, but a lot of opposing teams were just kind of seeing if he would pull it or not. And to be honest, I didn't think it looked bad and the results weren't bad. So that's another aspect of his game that you'll never see him do with Montverde, just simply because he doesn't need to. And then, you know, over the years, really, like I always envisioned Derek, if you guys had the chance to see him when he was a freshman at St. Francis, which not many people did because it was a COVID year and it was limited games, the majority of his plays were made from the high post or the top of the key, just being as an initiator or reader and all that stuff. It was only, you know, I was kind of shocked just how cemented in the paint that Montverde has him. I understand it because of the personnel they have around, but he's just capable of doing so much more. And I think the little flashes last night, you know, again, getting his hand on the ball and then him leading the fast break, he can do that with regularity and he makes the right decisions. So there's a lot of different, I just think adding Derek into the fold adds so much flexibility. And I know the staff can't wait to get their hands on him in terms of like, he's come a long way with his body, make no mistake. But once he gets, you know, in that strength and conditioning program and they really start, you know, working on his mobility, working on, you know, just his overall frame, they're going to get there. And I think that there's a lot of things that they can do. But yes, another shooter in that three to four position is definitely needed.
So yeah, you sound scary like thing offensive. About clean right there. Sorry, Paul. That's the scary thing right there is he's still got the little bit of baby fat. You could tell he is nowhere near maxing out, you know, yeah, what he will be. When he gets strong, it's going to be.
You've seen like over the years, like when he was a freshman, sophomore, like, you know, he was obviously he was even, you know, pudgier back then, and he kind of had you were kind of worried about him like hunching over with his back and whatnot, and you were just kind of keeping an eye on things. But now his shoulders are filling out. I mean, you can just tell from just pictures in itself, shoulders are filling out, his frame's getting more developed, and you know, he hasn't changed. I wouldn't say he's changed his play style enough, but what I was really looking for, whether it's in the game or just getting feedback from practice, was I'm glad he was going up a guy against, you know, like Flory Badunga, who's just an athletic specimen, because then you can kind of get a feel of how he's going to operate for those guys. And he's so unorthodox with, you know, whether it's stop and go movements, or there's a lot of moves that you just don't think he's capable of doing. and he just makes something out of nothing almost every time. He's been doing stuff like that since he was a freshman.
And it's interesting to me that it sounds like you see him more as a four offensively and defensively than a five, if you're talking about him and Juju together.
Yeah, for sure. No. If I had to choose between the two, yes. Like, and that's just me knowing what I know. And also it's kind of been scarred in my head that when during that COVID year, when I would, you know, I would go and watch those guys play. I mean, it was just a clinic of get Derek the ball at the high post and let him, you know, work high low action with Juju. And whether that be, you know, if Derek turns, faces and just attacks the middle, you know, it's stuff where he gets a defender up in the air and he can, you know, like a guard wrap around the big and give it to Juju on a delivery. So I just think we're in this national spotlight that he's been playing in with Montverde. Again, he's been extremely effective. His efficiency is, you know, music to everyone's ears. But I think that there's a lot of untapped potential that people will see moving forward. I'm not going to say that it's going to look pretty because it's really never looked pretty with Derek, but Derek doesn't care about pretty. He's just effective. I mean, it's just like if you took somebody who doesn't, you know anything about the NBA and you turn on the Nuggets game. Again, you see Jokic and you say that guy is the most impactful player in the league, and you watch him run up and down the court a couple of times. Like, there's no way that's the case. I just see a lot of similarities in terms of that sense with Derek.
So he's going to become the best player in the NBA. Got it. Cool. We got a lot
mark
of
it down. Watching. Mark it down.
We got a lot of people watching right now. Please do us a favor. Subscribe if you're on YouTube, Inside MD Sports. If you're on Twitter/X, it's at IMS Radio Show. Do us a favor. Subscribe. I know from looking at analytics, it's like 20% of our viewers are subscribed. So
two clicks, man. It's so easy.
Or you might be in some views in Bloomington tonight also, right?
It's free.
Yeah. So they want to bask in the afterglow of last night too with us.
Derek Queen's not in the headline, so we're not getting the Indiana folks. Okay, Colby, I'm sure you're not going to go into detail on this, but we've gotten about three questions in the chat, and I'm going to look out for my chatters. They want you to expound upon what you said earlier about one or two guys coming in. They want to know who the one or two guys are, if you're going to get any more elaborate with that.
I knew they weren't letting that slide.
Oh, now yeah. I know.
I would say I'm looking out for the chatters. Right, yeah.
Nope, I'm cool with that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to get into detail about it. What I will say is, you know, those guys have been mentioned and covered on, and I've seen in plenty of Jeff's articles, you know, on IMS. So if you're not a subscriber, I would do that and learn who they are going to track.
I feel like a proud dad.
Again, it's like, it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, I wouldn't say they're locked into this one individual. They're obviously keeping their options open, but there is one specific player that they're kind of waiting on. And then, you know, but if it strings along too long, they gotta adjust and go elsewhere. But all the names and all the guys that, you know, I've seen Jeff report on,
are they in the top 50 of the transfer rankings?
You said would they be?
Yeah,
he's talking about guys, Larry, who are not in the portal yet.
Right. Yeah. No, this is a name. Yeah. This is a name that isn't.
I didn't catch
but
that.
But would they be if they entered?
Would they be?
Top 50. I mean, look, you know, and I don't know the exact formula or evaluation method or whatever you want to call it, that they use in order to get, you know, portal rankings, because even the guys. So here's what I would say. If you're Maryland, you view this guy as a top 50 guy for you, for what you need.
Let me break this down real quick. I don't want to interrupt you, but do you feel like Maryland is still looking for a starter level guy at this point, or are they trying to fill in the bench here? Because to me, I wonder if you're imagining the roster at this very moment, you're probably looking at a combination of Gillespie, Rice, DHS, either Reason, Queen, or, you know, Geronimo, and one of those two. Like, to me, that doesn't feel good enough as a starting five if you really want to compete. So I'm just curious whether you guys, and I'll leave this for Jeff too, if you want to expound on it, just whether you feel like Maryland is still looking for a guy who is a starter or a potential starter for next year, because it feels like if they really want to compete, that they still need that level of talent.
Yeah, that's the question right there. I mean, because there's at least one guy in the equation, Rodney Rice, who could be a starter, but you just definitely has the talent, but he's unproven, so you don't know. So to me, that's kind of the right factor. They have to have a good feel for what he's going to be exactly. If you can get another guy who's talented enough to start, obviously you do. It's just hard to get guys to come in without knowing they have that clear path. I was going to ask Colby if his secret transfer rhymes with P in the Partinez by any chance.
When I saw that name pop up, I was just it did cross my mind. Like, I wonder if they just, you know, reach out to him just to see what's going on. I mean, can't hurt. But no, to address the question on my side, I mean, I definitely think that they'd be looking for a starter. I don't think they're trying to be gentle with anybody's feelings this go around. There's no need to be. You got to win. You need to, come through in this year. It's been well documented throughout message boards and wherever you want to live. I mean, people are sound. Just imagine where we would be, especially, you know, Larry, if we didn't get Derek Queen. I mean, yep. If we're sitting here today, Derek Queen's not coming.
Pitchforks and torches, man.
It would be rough, but we got that, and that fixes a lot of things for us. I think what they would do to kind of piggyback off what Jeff was saying is you go and find, you know, the best guard that you're looking for. And when I say a guard, more of a combo guard. I think they feel comfortable with Gillespie, you know, being the primary initiator, and he can kind of balance that with whomever. But I think you go and get the best guard and let the water kind of settle in practice. And I think, you know, if you gave me a scenario where they go and they get a very experienced, whether it be a fifth year, I mean, you can even do a sixth year, but a senior who is proven, maybe if it's at a lower level, but they bring them in for consistency. And then, you know, as Jeff alluded to, you know, with Rodney just kind of still being unproven to this point. However, he is a bucket getter and he's a guy who can, you know, definitely bring some energy in that sense. So, okay, now you just make the decision of, do we want to bring that off our bench or do we want to start him and then bring the consistent guy off the bench? So I think, again, if you had to make a checklist, it's kind of like best case scenario. Okay, can we address this wing issue? I want a long athletic wing that can make open shots, is a versatile defender, so that when we have to take Juju out, he gets in foul trouble because that's still a problem for him. Queen goes to the five. We get our athletic wing sliding down to the four, maybe get DHS in the three, so on and so forth. Rice can come in, or we have our consistent, you know, senior guard, and then Gillespie. So I think in that priority list, you go again, the athletic wing that is versatile and can shoot, and then get one of these, you know, savvy senior guards that are out there that can come in and you know what you're going to get from them.
Bryce Pope.
That's sorry. Gonna come.
Sorry.
I mean, he doesn't want to say names. I'm not gonna press.
No, I mentioned Pope earlier. It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, I wasn't busting Jeff's premium cover on that one. He said it.
Shameless plug, Paul. I probably will have something out on Bryce tomorrow at some point.
Imagine that. What a coincidence.
Wow. Look at that.
You know it's legit if you get the Colby breakdown. Like that's when you know you might as well just put the crystal ball in now.
Here's what I will say too, and you know, I've spoken with a lot of people about this certain scenario, but I still would say, like, if you guys were to ask me, which I know, you know, at the end here, if you guys hit me with some questions, like usual, I would. Who is your ideal transfer if I could get anyone right now, so then we can get that, check that off. And he doesn't check the athlete part, but he definitely checks the shooting needs, is Gibson Jimerson. It's gonna be a tough one. I know that when I did the breakdown, a lot of people just thought, oh, well, if he's going to do a breakdown, that means we're going to get him. That's not the case. I just want to start breaking down guys that are on the radar. That's going to be a tough one for a lot of schools, not just Maryland. Like, Maryland will be in position to go after him and potentially get him. But there are some factors that are involved there that are going to make it difficult for anybody.
Colby, I know you said you had 15 minutes and we're on 21 now. So thank you for going over for us. We'll let you go. I know you got to get going. So thank you for that, for joining us. I'm not going to hit you with the fill in the blank. I'm going to let you.
Is Derek Queen going to be a Terp next season?
that was last time.
Yeah. Feeling pretty good about that one.
All yeah, good. I hope so.
Thank you guys.
I hope he's always nuts. Thanks, Colby. See ya. Hey, wait, Colby, what is it? Colby G. What is your Twitter handle again?
Colby G Hoops.
Colby G Hoops.
Yep.
Follow him. He's, you guys, all that stuff, all that analysis you just heard, that's constant with him on
Font X. Of knowledge.
Yes. Just follow him and you'll love it. If you love what you just heard, you're going to love that. So give him a follow. Thanks, Colby.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.
See ya.
Thanks, Colby.
This is so exciting. I mean, just like we've talked about this a little bit before, how we're kind of old school, obviously, because we're old. And it does seem like in the future, freshman recruiting is going to be so de-emphasized compared to this portal stuff. But having these off seasons where it's just such a total shit show, you know, where you have no idea what half the roster is going to be or more, and you get to kind of re-go through this like super hyped up quick recruiting cycle with all these guys, most of which you've already played college, so you kind of know what you're getting. It's really fun. I mean, it just is.
I said that too. Like, the free agency period's kind of fun, but I still want the structure around it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Well, in the perfect world, right, a perfect world, you still have these two or three guy freshman classes where you know you're going to lose one or two along the way here and there, but you still got this backbone. You know, maybe a guy like DHS sticks it out for 3 or 4 years and he, you know, he ends up being the kind of player that you can fall in love with because he's here for a while and whatnot. And I was thinking about this a lot too, because it feels like if you're always going to have these guys who are just like 1 year rentals, that's gonna suck. It's hard for 1 year to really kind of fall in love with a player and really feel like you get to know them a little bit. But you know, we had Jameer for 2 years, and I feel like Jameer is as much of a Terp as any 4 year guy I can think of. It wasn't just because he was good, just because, you know, that feels like it was long enough for me to feel like he belongs and he was one of us. You know, I'm not sure a 1 year rental necessarily feels that way. You know, a Diamond Stone doesn't really feel that way. You know, but maybe Jordan Williams does. You know what I'm saying? Like, so just from a fan's perspective, it's going to be interesting to see whether fans really feel like in this period they can still kind of feel that connection with players in the way that they did before when most of them were here, you know, 2, 3, 4 years.
It's hard for me. That's what I've been saying. And that's what I – like what I just said about Kaiser, like that's –
And that's a bummer just because we know him. Yeah. We interviewed him a couple of times. He's like a great kid. He's, you know, he's like a guy who you want to root for. And yeah, he was, let's be honest, he was kind of not great. He was really not great last year. There are certainly some signs and some things that you can tell that he's probably going to grow into a quality college right. player.
That's what I wanted to see, you know?
But yeah, you'd have liked to experience some of it.
Yeah,
you'd have liked to experience some of that growth and still feel like there's a place in college basketball for kids to kind of work their way up to be, you know, like even like a Landon Milbourne kind of player, you know, a guy who, you know, who really kind of sits in the background until his junior or senior year and really becomes a really quality guy that's really fun to root for. So that part's going to be tough as a fan. But then again, if Maryland goes and wins the Big Ten next year, nobody cares.
Yeah.
I won't.
Well, there are some other – most of the questions that came through we hit them, if not directly on, we hit most of those. There's a couple of interesting comments. I like this. Show Mariel, pardon the spelling there, from T-Boat 18. Yeah. Show Mariel, hit the portal, time to come home. That's hilarious.
He still has eligibility left? That's crazy.
He's been on like six teams now, right? If Duke was first and then somebody else before Maryland, right? Wasn't Maryland his third team?
Wasn't Duke.
He was originally going to commit to Duke, right? Wasn't he committed to Duke?
Yeah, but they took him out of high school after the injury, and then he went to Oregon State. He's been there for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah,
Didn't do much. I mean, he averaged like 4 points a game or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's also not very good.
Maybe never it's the not same as many after as the injury. Yeah,
it's going to be it's going to be funny too, because you probably have a scenario now where there might end up being like 7 or 8 or 9 former Maryland players in the portal at some point in their careers. I mean, it could be like a whole, you could like make a whole roster out of former Maryland players. Currently
it would not be a good roster though.
No,
it wouldn't. Ian Martinez would be good. All right. And here's another interesting comment about the portal. 24/7 portal ranking. Lamoth is 133. Kaiser's 151. Lower than Lamoth, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's probably. I think that's a matter of once you get to that. I don't think they're pouring over hours of video once you get to that level of the rankings. But that
is it. One of those things where like they sometimes have people their high school score. Sometimes they have their transfer score, a different rating. So maybe Kaiser's
that is
rating,
what it is. Yeah, no, they're reevaluated for the transfer rankings, but I don't know if there's.
So he's still. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think there's a recruiter out there who would. This is not to knock Jonathan Lamoth. I hope he's a very nice kid, and I'm sure he'll do well. But I don't think there's a recruiter out there who would put him ahead of Kaiser in their rankings. But once you get to that lower level, you know how much. How much are they really reviewing of Jonathan Lamoth's, freshman video and that sort of thing? And Kaiser, like I said, 26%, you're not going to be ranked very highly. But
no. Congrats to Roz.Wheat for the two comments in one episode. That's rare. Nice job. Nice job there. You got two.
I don't know who Elijah Malone is.
So
nobody answered that.
I think we covered just about everything. There's not really much more football stuff that's happened since our last show, but I have been doing some spring cleaning and I'm digging through old stuff and I found a book.
Wait, hold on, Larry. Hold on before you go there.
What? Yeah.
Jeff, do you have any inklings or anything coming out of spring football so far? I know it's only been a week and change and they have their first scrimmage, this Saturday, but just curious if you heard anything.
I've heard, little bits and pieces. Like you said, 1 week, it's hard to really say anything. I think the biggest thing is I really believe it's a wide open quarterback competition. I think people are underestimating, whether they like it or not, Billy Edwards' chances. What I've gathered, I wouldn't be surprised if he's unofficially the favorite right now, although it's way, way early for that, obviously. And then, everything I've gathered is as expected. The defensive front seven is a strength. I mean, that defensive line, they bring back a huge amount of experience and size, so they should be really good. So that's the unit that stands out, I think, overall. Definitely some concerns at cornerback, which is no surprise because they don't have really anybody proven on the roster, at least other than Jalen Husky, the kid who transferred from
Bowling. Good things about Husky, though.
Yeah. I've heard good things there too. They like him, but they got to. I think that they will be going after more in the portal once spring ball ends.
Right, because you are going to have after spring ball ends, you'll have another situation where you probably lose another 5 guys. So just when people start shaking out roster spots and depth charts and things like that. The other thing is, I'm actually going to practice next week, but it'll be next Thursday, so I won't be able to share anything on next week's show, but the week after that, I might have a little bit of firsthand.
Nice. Paul doing some journalism.
It's rare, but every once in a while you gotta see if those fire up that engine, see if it still runs.
So I started talking about this. I did some spring cleaning and I found a book 100 Things Maryland Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's written by Don Marcus. I don't, what do people feel about Don Marcus? Is there any positive or negative connotation to him?
I like Don. Don calls me every once in a while. Every gives me a nice update on his pickleball game down in Florida. Super nice guy. That he was a great reporter. So
he's no a fun guy. Fun guy in the press box. He was a bit of a trip.
Forward by Gary Williams.
So very nice.
I did not look at this at all, but what I thought we would do for the show ending segment instead of the over under and that kind of stuff is just go through like 5 or 10 of these and like just see what they are. The 100 things that Maryland fans should know and do before they die. So I'm
what live year was this published? This is
2016.
Okay, so we're a little
been in some bottom of some bin for how many years? I probably got this like some Christmas present or something. So the foreword by Gary is about 2.5 pages long. I'm not going to read that, but here we go. I'm live reacting this too. Number one, UCLA of the East is the first topic, and it's, oh God, it's 3 pages long. I'm not going to read that, but UCLA of the East, I think most people know what that is, right? It's from the
70s. I would hope so. Yeah.
Because UCLA was so dominant in the late 60s into the 70s. And
yeah, that was Lefty's thing.
Lefty wanted Maryland to become the UCLA of the East, which never quite materialized, but got close, sort of. But he's the
Gonzaga of the East.
Now he's the Gonzaga, kind of, yeah. But that was at the time when you didn't have multiple bids. So
only the ACC champion would get in. And I bet. If you look back at that 1974 game against that NC State team with David Thompson and Burleson and those guys, like if they win that game, they might win that NCAA tournament. And then you're talking about a whole other level of
Maryland has two. There. Two is Garyland. I don't know. I'm not going to read that. That's just the nickname that people gave to sort of kind of Coalfield House and kind of just the whole kind of culture of Maryland basketball during his tenure. Three, Moses Malone was nearly a Terp. Yes, he was. He committed, but then went straight to the pros. That's another one. Maybe.
No, not. I mean, people don't understand how close Lefty was to making Maryland really, really, really elite. I mean,
like, I know
that the scope of bad luck that basically took Lefty down at Maryland in terms of losing that game to NC State and Moses Malone. And then obviously the Bias tragedy. I mean, it was Maryland was getting close to the sun there for a while.
Yeah. Number four, Cool Hand Luke. You guys know who that is? I do. This is very old.
John Lucas.
Yes. Yeah. That's his nickname. Cool Hand Luke. That's his nickname. So he is, I think if you're having like, he might be on a Mount Rushmore. He was a three-time All-American.
I think three-time.
No, I've never thought to try to get him. He'd be a great guest.
Yeah, he really would.
He'd be great. And then he was a number one pick in the draft. And I mean, imagine that now. You know, he's elite, elite, elite. Him and Lenny and Joe Smith and Juan.
It was like having Steve Francis for 3 years. I mean, that's how good he was. I mean, he wasn't that kind of athlete and showstopper, but I mean, he was.
Okay. Excellent. Number five, this Bud's for you. That's Bud Milliken. So Bud Milliken was the coach back in the 50s-ish and into the 60s. Yeah. Gary's coach. Yeah.
And we were not good back then.
Bud Milliken. Is this good? Should I keep going? Is this kind of fun for everybody or no?
Do a couple more.
Couple more. Okay. Not Your Average Joe. I know who that is. I just said
it. Joe Smith.
Joe Smith, freshman of the year in the country and in the ACC, All-American as a national player of the year, number one draft pick, sophomore. Imagine that.
Yeah, it'll never make sense that he didn't have a little – he had a solid NBA career, but you know, I'm not sure why it didn't quite translate fully.
Yeah, seven is Old King Cole, so that's just Coalfield House. I think most people know the historic importance of Coalfield House from Maryland and also the 1966 UTEP game, the all-black roster that was at Coalfield House. That's part of Coalfield House's history. what else?
It's really, really super fun place in terms of the football practice facility. If you haven't been there yet, I mean, it's
I walked in and saw it. Yeah.
It's really neat that that's the same structure.
Huh. Okay. This says, was it the Bob number eight? Was it the Bob Wade era or error? So he's being funny. Play on words there.
I'm not touching that one.
Yeah, that was a tough era, I'll say.
He also got screwed royally.
He did, by
the administration here and by the fact the NCAA was headhunting and looking for an excuse.
Yes.
But, you know, he wasn't an innocent bystander necessarily either. So it's a complicated one.
I'll do two more. I'll just get to 10 here. Let's see what's next. Number nine, Booth opens the door to Baltimore. So this kind of touches on something that was just recently said, where Loxley got asked, is Maryland a DC or a Baltimore school? And everybody, the answer should be hopefully both, right? Like, you want both markets to like Maryland, be sending fans and sending players. There was a big issue with Maryland recruiting Baltimore kids, in particular after Bob Wade. He's from Baltimore. There was a lot of angst in the Baltimore community towards Maryland. And Keith Booth came to Maryland at a time when that was pretty heavy, against some wishes from some of the heavy players in Baltimore. And he came and sort of opened the door back to Baltimore, so they say. But that's what that's about. Anything to add to that? I got that right, I think.
From Dunbar, too. And that was, I think Wade came from Dunbar.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so no, that was huge at the time. I certainly remember that.
Oh, this is the perfect way to end it. Number 10, we're off to see the Wizard. There we go. Walt the Wizard, we've talked about him so many times. All the things
I still want my clutch vodka, Larry.
I got it. I'm waiting to, bring it. I wanted to give it over at a live show, like the next live show we do. Here's your clutch vodka. You know what? I'll just bring it to the next. I'm going to the Maryland Rutgers lacrosse tailgate a week from this Saturday. So go to that and I'll give it to you there.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I mean,
well, I'm going. Reels and I are going.
The cross tailgates are great fun. Don't get me wrong. I can't do that.
Yeah. So there's 90 more of these. You know, we can do another session of that if you want.
Buy the book and get Don an extra set of golf clubs or something, however that works.
Yeah. All right, guys. Good show. Lots of people watching. That's pretty cool. And Colby is awesome. What was he? Colby G Hoops. At Colby G Hoops on X. So good at the analysis stuff and very interesting. And he's really spot on with all that stuff. And I feel
I was going to say, nobody knows Derek Queen's game better than Colby does. So I've already said, I don't imagine that him and Reese are actually going to play like that much together, but I certainly feel a lot better about that situation now.
Yes! Oh my God! Two outs, bottom of the ninth. Orioles walk off. They were down 3-2. Two runs. Oh my God! With two outs in the bottom of the ninth, let's go. Sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know.
You spoiled this for everybody who's waiting till Thursday morning to watch the game on replay. Yes.
That's right.
Listen to Ghost. He's happy too.
Go hit it.
Jake can the backup catch. You don't.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What's up?
Is that your dog going apeshit?
Yes, my dog. He's good. It's Ghost. He talks a lot. When I cheer and I get riled up, so does he. So,
all right, that's weird.
Ghost, come down. Normally I put him upstairs, but sometimes he just wants to hang out down here and,
and stop, make dying sounds.
Yeah, seriously.
It's if you really want to hear
an ambulance was driving down the street.
On YouTube or whatever, you can. Even on TikTok or anywhere you can watch videos, people put videos of like huskies howling and one will start. And if there's a group of them, they all start going and it's crazy. They all go nuts. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Paul. What were you saying? Do you
remember? I don't know. I forget.
I forget too. I'm just happy because the Orioles are about ready to lose. They're down 3-2 with two outs. Wow. Okay. All right. Good show, guys. please do us a favor. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, all that kind of stuff. It's helps a lot.
You too, Indiana fans.
Yeah, you too, the Indiana.
Even just to talk crap to Jeff.
Even if you're a publisher, you can subscribe for the scoop if you need it.
Yeah. If there's anybody whose initials are RJ.
Daggers in that statement.
All right. All right, thank you guys. I don't know when we'll be back. It seems like the news might be slowing down a little bit. Maybe we're going to go to a more off-season type schedule here. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
See how the portal works, man. It could be, could be more crazy. Who knows?
Could be. Maybe Colby's guy will join. So maybe we'll see.
Colby's secret recruit.
The secret guy, yes. Yeah. All right. I'm going to be sending him a text right after this. Thank you, guys. This is IMS Radio.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.